This is a production of Cornell University.
By the authority vested in me by all of you, did you push the button? Good. I call you to order. I realize a hard thing to do, but there it is. And the first thing we begin is the approval of the minutes from March 30th, 2011. Do I hear comments on the minutes?
I have a couple very small things, if I may.
Are our scribes paying attention here?
The scribe is behind you, I believe. Not ready.
But as I noticed, Amy, I think our meeting is too short today, so I'm getting this started dragging it out. One thing, I don't know if this is worth noting, but Section 2, the minutes were approved unanimously. Not just approved, that maybe not worth noting. All the other votes say how they were. In Section 4, the paragraph beginning, E. Lowe reminded, in the second sentence there, the word discussion occurs twice. And the change that actually matters, Section 6, in the child care, under the child care subcommittee section, the second paragraph, second sentence, E. Corten said, I propose, it says right now, E. Corten said, since the charter can change more flexibly now, what I meant to say is, I don't know if that was what I actually said, but what I meant to say was, E. Corten said, since the bylaws are flexible, et cetera, et cetera. Because, of course, this isn't a charter change we're talking about. This is the bylaws change, and the bylaws only require majority approval. That's actually a significant change.
Yeah. Have scribes managed to...
Say that again.
The sentence beginning, E. Corten said, should continue, since the bylaws are flexible, comma, even if we put them in next year, in this year, sentence. Rest of the sentence.
Are there other additions, corrections, emendations, or things to the minutes? Then, hearing none, I declare them approved unless somebody objects. Good. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Also good. We now come to the bylaws amendments agreed at the 3:30 meeting. You want to talk about this, Ed? I don't remember what we agreed to.
Well, I wasn't at the last meeting, but it's just basically my understanding is, and from the minutes, is that what was discussed at the last meeting was generally agreed upon by the body. And I don't know, you guys may have done some sort of vote, but Ari just wants a procedural vote to approve what was the wording that was written up in the course of what was what came out of that meeting.
The most significant change was the shift in the model of the committees. The language we had going into last week's meeting was that it would be 8, 4 UA plus 4 other. We voted to change it to 11, 3 UA plus 8 other. And Ari wrote that language.
Right, and then there was, as I recollect, a considerable email discussion about whether that was a good idea to have done that, with Ari leading the charge in opposition, as I recollect.
I have, at last, gracefully conceded.
Uh-huh.
And what's in there reflects what was voted upon at the last meeting.
Yep.
So Ari was trying to convince us that it was better, but he has seen the light.
Oh, I'm for that.
He has conceded his position and not willing to fight any more time.
So this wording, for the moral of the story, is this wording reflects what the last meeting resolved, and this is just to vote formally to accept the wording, to tie up all possible loose ends.
So moved.
So we have a motion upon the floor. Is this comes from a committee, I suppose. So it probably doesn't need a second, but maybe we could find one anyway.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. We have it on the floor. Is there any discussion?
I think I'd just like to add that, you know, Ari, Ed, and I went kind of back and forth on this one, and, you know, we could not come up with a perfect system in regards to the committee. But I do think we should discuss, hopefully at the end of this meeting or at the next one is just the transition that's coming upon us and the situation that's happening with a lot of us leaving this body and a whole new class coming on board and how best to manage that. So I think this would be a good point of discussion at some point either today or at the next meeting, but sooner the better, I would say.
Sounds good. Are there any further discussion on the bylaws?
Is the vote on the entire bylaws?
I think
or just on the
3-2 as language as revised.
No.
Developed.
So is that clear? I mean,
that's 3-2-2.
It's the section that's been revised.
Well, this,
is there any further discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Yes.
All right. All in favor of these bylaws, please signify by raising your hand.
Wait, this is all the bylaws?
Yeah.
Okay. All the bylaws.
All the bylaws. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 in favor and opposed. 1. Any abstentions? So it's 11 to 1. I'm afraid the majority has always ruled.
That's right.
All right. We now proceed to the charter response from President Skorton. It seemed to me that he had two basic suggestions. And I should have brought them with me, but I failed to do so. Ari, can you put them up and so that we can admire them?
Yes, just a moment.
You missed an important vote.
Yeah.
You can vote with me or with everybody else.
Uh-oh, here comes something. Good.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here he is. The first sentence to be changed from that he wants to add on its own initiative. And it seems to me that that is not really a substantive change. It just makes it clear that we can look at anything we want to if and when we want to.
It's not a substantive change.
What happens if it's a substantive change?
What
is the substantive? We've got to talk about
it. We need to talk about it more.
Okay.
But, you know, we can talk about this if anybody cares.
I actually happen to like it.
I do too. I think it broadens the shooting license.
Yeah.
It makes it very
safe. Yeah, I think even more authority, more apparent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then does that change?
Second.
All right. We've had a motion that's been seconded. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, are you ready for the question? And all in favor of this change, signify by raising a paw. Okay, I'm afraid that's unanimous.
Oh, I missed one? I'm sorry.
Lucky number 39.
Okay. So that one is approved unanimously. And now we come to a more entertaining one. The Assembly shall also defer to the advisory authority of the Faculty Senate and the college and school faculties regarding matters of educational policy within their purview, pursuant, love it, to the university bylaws. What it seems to me to say is thou shalt pay attention to what the Faculty Senate and not try and trample upon its prerogatives.
I also feel that it's kind of already implicit in what we do, you know, because we can't trample over something that is only in the purview of the Faculty Senate, whereas what we overview is something that's across all constituencies. So overall, I think it's already there in our charter.
Yeah. Also, if all we really do is make recommendations, not actual
we don't pass anything. So if there were
like the CJC.
Oh yeah, right. But
for the most
and for the most part, so I kind of feel like the president would have the power to step in should there be some conflict with what the faculty senate is proposing. So that's kind of inherent in what we have the ability to do. So I don't know if that's if this is really significant in that or not.
Tony, I don't think this hurts it, and if this moves the proceedings, that's fine. Because we can always say, deferring to this authority of the faculty senate, our opinion is whatever we want.
Yeah. I think all this does is clarify where the president wants people to take these kind of matters to, the department and the senate. Of course, if we think the policy is wrong or we think the senate's got it wrong, we know that we'll write a resolution, and I suppose if he says it's not in our charter, we'll say thank you for your resolution and no thank you because of the following reason. So I don't think we've lost a thing.
I think we have lost a thing, but I'll be very quick about it. That I fought for academic matters for the whole year, and I'm going to say this just strengthens my argument that the new charter has been very effective of eliminating what the university assembly has been effective in doing this past year, child care subcommittee and the biology curriculum. So, and that's my piece.
I don't think, you know,
so I'm just going to say that I agree with what everyone said except what Randy just said, because I don't think it's our I don't think we have the right or the privilege to make educational policy, and I think that does belong with the faculty senate and the college and the school faculty, not the university assembly. And I think Ellis, a meeting or two ago, I thought he was very explicit about explaining that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other comments?
Well, I was going to, you know, second that. The point for me is that our authority to deal with educational matters is precisely the same, whether or not this sentence is present, and whether or not we list academic matters as part of that list of bullets at the heading at the top of section 3. You know, namely, we don't have any authority in that area, and it doesn't matter what we write into our charter. We can still, as has been said, feel free to pass resolutions on whatever we choose, including the biology curriculum or any other academic issue that may or may not come up in the future. But we don't have authority in that area. The president and the trustees have not granted it to us.
I think that's exactly correct. Any further comments? Are you ready for the question? All in favor of this change, signified by... Anybody opposed? Yes. Okay, so it's...
Oh, another one.
I'm sorry. Two.
I'm opposed.
You buy it?
Yeah.
You want to say why you...
double. I don't really want to tear this apart. I do think it's a little bit superfluous. I also have concerns that there are some areas where... I think the faculty could give a little. And my pet peeve over the past couple of years has been class tours and technologies associated with learning the environment and that whole process. And I think we need to have a say, or the students, and especially the graduate students who've had to bang their heads against the wall for Blackboard, this is my pet peeve, need to have a say in this area.
But I think you've got it, because it's a matter of concern to the university community. That is, Blackboard affects students, faculty, and staff in those things. And therefore, at one level, it comes under the purview of whatever committee it is that interacts with CIT. And so it seems to me it's perfectly legit.
I've been familiar with the fact that Blackboard's been handled by Sabbath.
As a member of FABIT, I can say that there's been considerable unhappiness with Blackboard on FABIT.
Yes.
Anyway.
Well, this is, yeah, why do you want to go
on? Okay. I think, anyway, we have passed this, and we now
have a question.
have a charter.
If I may say one more thing, this is basically further to Mike's point, not about Blackboard, but about it being superfluous. Mm-hmm. I think one could make the argument that 3.5, that whole section, is superfluous, which basically says, well, which says, nothing contained herein shall be construed to limit or constrain the president or any other officers of the university in the exercise of their delegated authority. I mean, we don't need that. It wouldn't matter whether or not that whole article was there. We cannot and do not constrain the authority of the president or other officers of the university. So,
but that sentence keeps university council happy.
Exactly. That sentence keeps the president happy, and ultimately we serve as the pleasure of the president.
Well,
but
well, I think we have now solved that problem, and now the only thing that's left on the agenda is to adjourn. But I think before we do that, we should chat a little bit about committees and that whole business.
Anyone else not signed the?
You don't get paid if you didn't sign in.
Oh, no.
Our salary is not.
Well, you have to give your dinner back. That. So who wants to talk about committees?
Well, if I may, an idea that I floated 2 weeks ago about the child care subcommittee, and I've thought about drafting an email to Brenda et al., responding to the email that Randy forwarded to us about this. I regret that I haven't had time. My A exam is next Thursday. So
is that something you're preparing for?
No, I'm just watching TV.
That's what I'm doing.
I already know everything. Just give me the degree. Exactly.
And the powers to control educational policy.
Exactly.
By remember the oral minutes.
Google will figure out a way to search for
that. The idea basically that I floated, and this has just been a sort of idea, is to help ease the transition as we move, that we might, the strongest way to do this would be to write a resolution that basically mandates, if we have the authority to do that, next year's UA to continue provisionally the child care subcommittee. Lesser versions of that could include things like, you know, recognizing the importance of the work they've done. We encourage them to participate as part of the campus welfare committee to continue to share their expertise and thoughts on family services. I agree, of course, with Randy, having attended one of their meetings anyway, that, you know, this is a motivated and interested group of people. It would be a shame that they feel shunned by the university assembly. I think I can speak for myself, but probably for other people in this room, when I say that I feel that that's not what these bylaw changes are about. They're not about pushing out a group of interested people. They're about broadening the authority of a committee so that they can engage in other things. And also being sure not to, I think, enshrine one particular issue institutionally, saying that, yes, child care was a big deal last year, it was a big deal this year, and it may well be a big deal next year, but it might not be in 10 or 20 years. So allowing the committee itself the authority to create a subcommittee for the year, to create an ad hoc committee, if it so chooses, you know, is addresses that issue, I think. But I think we need, my whole point here, we need to make an effort as an assembly to really, I think, reach out especially to the child care subcommittee and say that we do value you and your work, and we hope that you'll continue to work within the new structure, that it's not disrespectful of your effort.
Any comments on that suggestion?
I've been thinking along the similar lines. I don't know that I've somebody who probably knows these proceedings better than I do can say, but I'm not sure we have the authority to mandate the creation of an ad hoc committee next year by the U.S.
That's probably true.
I think
certainly recommend it, though.
Yeah, I would be in support of a resolution to recommend to the incoming U.A. to make an ad hoc child care committee of the family services, or campus welfare committee, and to, you know, in recognition of what they've done, and that there's still a continuing need for that body to work on that issue.
I would just recommend before doing that a conversation with them so it's not, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not us telling them what to do, that they would be, if that's something they want to do, to give them that option?
Next year's Campus Welfare Committee, you mean? Or this year's Child Care Services Subcommittee? All of the above.
Yeah, all of the above.
I think you just want to make sure that it doesn't seem like we're projecting anything onto them, whereas it's more integrative, like we are in recognition of their work, we want to make sure that they continue and survive. So we're doing this. I think it's a fantastic idea.
So it's a collaboration,
right?
Not top down.
I guess that I take for granted their interest and willingness to continue to work on issues like these. That's a fair point. They may not.
Well, I think one of the whereas should be, whereas we have discussed it with the current community and they would like to be connected in this way.
Yeah.
We recommend that next year's UA formalize this arrangement. Mm-hmm.
How many more meetings have we got? One more. I wonder if it makes sense. I think it's a great idea. It doesn't bind anybody to anything, really, but it does, I think, encourage the committee who's worked hard. And I think they deserve that. Would somebody be willing to go and talk with the committee or talk with the chair of the committee and just sound them out about this suggestion?
Randy, how about you?
Oh, no, I've fought for the committee in a different way.
I will.
I'd rather maintain.
Okay.
I will.
Leon?
Is it Brenda?
Brenda Mars.
Yeah.
Brenda Mars.
I would do it, but the earlier comments read my schedule of
But you, I don't already know it all. You said so.
Yeah.
Ah.
No, I think it's in. I think it's great.
No, we
had this discussion. The audio minutes don't count. I propose putting them in the bylaws.
Just the one thing I would add to that is just the question of, is the UA going to be prepared next year to send members to attend its meetings and take an active role in its activities, because the whole reason for it being left out of the standing committee structure was that there was a feeling that the UA couldn't sustain that level of engagement. But I'm saying if it's a recommendation that's just to make people feel better or feel more respected, maybe there's a way to do that without promising something that the UA is not going to be able to deliver, which is full engagement and support for this committee.
If I may respond,
please.
It seems to me that this is a recommendation, the motion will be a recommendation to the new overall committee, which this will be a subcommittee.
Okay.
I don't think that's a promise. I think it simply says we're recommending to the next committee, of which you're going to be a subcommittee, that they take you seriously and put on. Now, if they say, we don't want to do this, we can't do it, then they can't do it. So I think it's a reasonable gesture.
The bylaws, I think, they specify the composition of our standing committee,
right.
3 plus 8,
right.
But they don't specify the composition of our subcommittees.
Right.
But I still think that there's a real point to what Ari said, which is,
yeah.
I think if you're going to have a subcommittee, you've got to have somebody from the parent committee on it for communication.
Can I expand this discussion a little bit larger?
Sure, please.
To, I think, encompass the oncoming train. How many people at this table are going to be at this table next year?
Probably.
So we get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then, given the election, if you win that or get appointed here, it's probably going to be about the same number. So we're probably losing about, give or take, half the people right now at this table, if not more, you know, who weren't able to make this meeting here today. And, you know, one of the things we've talked about with Ari and in regards to this committee, but in regards to the whole process of the UA, is how do we keep momentum going? You know, we spent basically 90-95% of our time this year on the charter and the bylaws. And we know it by heart. We know it very well. You know, this is basically our near-perfect design for the system that we would be running if we were still here. How do we educate, you know, the newcomers, the new leaders of this body next year and prepare them for operating this assembly under this new set of bylaws, explain to them our rationale for these, you know, certain things here and there. How do we make sure that the, you know, the dean of the faculty and the presidents and chairs of each assembly are at this table and involved and are engaged with this process? And how do we make sure that our committees are functioning, are talking with the UA, and are, you know, doing a good job of meeting consistently? And those are the things that I don't think can be, you know, hammered out into a set of bylaws or a charter. You know, that a lot of that stuff happens at a personal level. And I'm wondering right now, and I'm willing to help out on it, but how are we managing this transition? Because it's a big transition for us. It's something that, you know, we really need to do to maintain a lot of the good momentum that we've, that has been moving us forward this year.
Good question, yeah.
One thing that pops up into my mind, at least for the new upcoming UA members following this term, would be something similar to orientation session. I know they do that, not sure with essay, but they do that with several groups. You could have something like that. You could have get in contact with them over the summer. Send like an email, an attachment, this is the structure, this is how things work. Please be sure to review this before our meeting on such date.
Mm-hmm. Is there a business or organizational meeting on the agenda?
May 4th.
May 4th, okay.
I think the other thing to be said is that the charter and the bylaws have been wildly simplified over what they were, and so they are actually even vaguely readable.
Yeah.
And if you read them, they might even be understandable.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some progress there, and then as you point out, there'll be about half the members around the table here next year. And I think the idea of an orientation session is a good one, where we go through the general principles that we've tried to articulate.
Article or section 2.9 of the bylaws mandates that the chair you prepare an annual report. I think that sort of thing can serve this sort of a function, that members coming in next year, I mean, we can mandate them to, but that doesn't really matter. People don't, of their own initiative, want to do it. It's sort of moot. If they would read that report, they'll know what we've done, and they'll say, oh, that catches my eye, I want to keep going with that, or what a waste of time, I don't want to do that anymore, or anything in between.
Mm-hmm.
But at least they'll know what we've done.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I know that there's an assembly's, overall assembly's orientation for new people at the beginning of the year. Not everybody can make it, but there is a process to explain that. You have to realize that people who are new to committee, they volunteered or got elected, appointed, they're going to read the charter and bylaws. They should read the pass down, but I don't know what the tradition is. If I were the chair or something or a head of an office, I always leave a sealed letter in the desk for the successor with, you know, those things from me to them, what I thought, what I think they might want to consider, and they can read it and follow it or shred it. But, you know, I don't know any chairperson who doesn't try to contact last year's chair. It's not required. But that those left behind will certainly, if they like the direction we've headed this year, will attempt to resurrect it. And then, you know, it's going to be both different and wonderful. But you have to trust that they're going to try and do the right thing. And we will not be able to backseat drive those of us who will walk around the campus going, what's the UA thinking? when we read the article in the paper today.
when we recommended that we terminate the contract.
Correct.
Right.
Unbelievable. Leon?
I also was going to suggest like a UA orientation, because then it's not up to chance. I think it should be, you know, very formal and very structured, so it's passed on to the next, you know, UA members. So I would highly recommend the orientation.
Yeah, the GPSA does an orientation for its voting members just by itself, or at least we did this year.
Right.
Another thing that we did this year, Brian Forster, who's been involved with the GPSA for 5 years or something, wrote a sort of guidebook, just a very not like the charter and bylaws, a more casual oral history, sort of a, you know, this is kind of how things work and this is sort of how things go. That's a, he worked very hard on that. I'm not suggesting that we necessarily do something like that. But that can be maybe something to think of in the future as a companion to charter and bylaws.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What's my age? My tie's on the beach. The dissertation.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Just like any other additional things, or regarding the same subject?
No, I was thinking of additional things at this point. Seems to me
just to finish that thought up.
Okay.
I think it would really. I'd like to see stuff happening started much much earlier than next fall, and I think each of the constituent blocks needs to get engaged with their successors and really start working with them. I think directly. Even over the next couple of weeks as it pops up. I know the SA or the undergraduate elections have already happened. I don't know. The employee elections are going on. I know things are still in transition, but once the successors are identified, start working with them to educate them about the process we went through this year and what we hope to see coming out of this body next year. And then once this new body comes together, I think on the May 4th meeting, they can hopefully have their chairs elected and their officers elected, and hopefully at that point our executive committee, I'm sure, will take the lead in educating their replacements.
Yeah, yes. Just with that notion, I'll certainly encourage William Ramsey to reach out to the successors. I'll contact Melissa, I know her, and we'll just start having those kind of conversations.
Good. I just want to go back for a minute to Brenda. I'm not sure if I should contact her or not. That, to me, I didn't get closure on. Did I hear closure that I should go ahead and?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely.
When are the new faculty appointed or elected to this?
Well, the Nominations and Elections Committee is presumably doing these kinds of things. Not being an active faculty member, I am omitted from all their mailing lists, so I have absolutely no idea whether they've sent out their call for suggestions or where they're at.
And do they know of the new allocations?
Probably not.
Maybe we should send an email to Bill Fry to try and find out what's going on.
I will be glad to try and ascertain what is going on.
I think that's a good idea.
I've talked with Bill once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
Other more on this one? Any other topics that we ought to discuss at this point? Yes.
I just want to update you guys on the current progress on the bias response program. So we've got feedback from several people who stepped in for those sessions. And now we're in the process of redesigning it. And if you'd like to help us out with the redesign process for your input, I have 4 dates, I think. One's on April 25th from 9 to 10, May 4th from 9 to 10, and May 5th from 10:30 to 11:30.
Where?
That was a good question, actually. Oh, Day Hall 160.
And this is to talk about what feedback came back and how to integrate that for that the redesign?
Yeah.
Can you send an email?
Can you send that to
them? Yeah, that would be good, yeah.
Okay, I'll write that down. And then the other one of my concerns that I've been thinking of addressing, I want to see if this is true, first of all, and if it is true, I want to see if there's anything that we can do from our end to address it. I've heard that professors have to submit what books they're going to need or what sources they're intending to use for the courses they're teaching the next semester months ahead of time. And I also know that students don't have access to those book lists until like about a month or a month and a half before. I don't think it's even that much either. So what I was hoping to do is I want to see if that's number one true. And then, secondly, if that is true, I want to see if we can maybe do a recommendation such that these, like, we can, those aggregate booklets could be forwarded to the student body so that they can prepare for class ahead of time and find more affordable rates for books.
I think that it's the faculty handbook that says they have to submit in advance, right? So
no, well, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I know that the campus store is pushing very hard for that because they want to know whether they should buy back a lot of books for the next year. So the sooner they know, the more used books they buy, and the better that serves the students. And some faculty are very conscientious about this, and other faculty, I don't know how to put it delicately, are not quite as responsible. I think that's a very, I don't see why the moment the faculty have decided and sent it as a book list to the campus store, why it can't be public information at that point. I think it's just a question of some mechanism of distributing it.
And maybe if there was some way to work with the campus store.
Yeah, I wonder if there's pressure from the campus store to kind of keep it quiet until a couple of days before when now we're back at school. Classes are starting in 3 days. Where are you going to get your books? You're going to go. Well, did you go to academy?
Yeah. You can point that to Mr. But you are not completely wrong in that there are many people who would buy back textbooks. And as I recall, the campus store briefed us on this process. This was probably 2 years ago in the University Assembly. They came in and they gave us a big thing about it. So it was a lot more intricate than it seems. It wasn't quite anti-competitive, but it played to the limits.
It's the campus store that actually does the work in asking you for what books you're going to use.
Right. In other words, they have a vested interest in it, and also the professors have to determine whether they want to revise their textbooks or not. And so it's not just as easy as picking somebody else's book. And
I'll add to that in that I vaguely remember that campus store presentation. And they had said that it was no easy task to get the faculty members to actually give them the book list on time. And then I'll also say that I've had some interactions with the owner and manager of Crafties in Collegetown, and he has a devil of a time finding out what books, and actually does it of his own accord, hunting down the faculty members one by one to find out what books.
Actually, I can say something. So the campus store I answered their request for which textbooks I'm going to do, but when other stores do it, I just that's one of the things that I just cut. I get 6 million requests of things that I'm not going to do, and that just happens to be one exactly that. But if the student assembly, for example, or whatever, decided they wanted to ask us, or even this assembly, perhaps educational policy, what books we wanted to do. So it was a public, a public thing that would go to everybody. So I'd only have to answer once. I'd be happy to share my information with anybody who wanted it.
Seems to me this is a perfect topic for this body to make a resolution about. And I really agree with Randy. It seems to me that I think it's unreasonable to provide just the campus store with this information. I think we should be an equal opportunity
pricing gouger.
I caution you because I don't remember the exact presentation, but it was, there were a lot of dynamics in entire campus store funding issues, as well as the campus store kicks back to, a lot of money to the university. So it wasn't a sinister, we're trying to protect our sandbox. It was a complex discussion that was not inappropriately handled. So I would definitely educate yourself
first
on why they do what they do. However the professors respond aside, there is a rationale for how the campus store handles it, and it is not just a in-your-face, for Cornell, they're Cornell professors, so everybody else talks in the hand. It is a very complex financial model that is not only operating their store, but as I recall,
funding several of the other things that we do here out of their margin of profits and stuff. And so
it sounds like maybe they need to be invited back, as well as to the students that we should invite them as well.
Randy, so I remember that discussion, and I think here it's a matter of, I mean, they're on the up and up, and the students are on the up and up.
Right.
And so we have a choice at this point whether to say, let's give the campus store access to this increased margin to do what they feel is best, or to give the students that excess margin to spend how they would rather.
Well, it's certainly an issue that they weren't looking at, but just realize that some people might agree that the free market, the complete free market textbook, is not necessarily in the best interest of Cornell. And others might say, well, nobody should tamper with it.
So Ari was doing exactly what I was thinking, and I would just make the recommendation of looking back at past UA or past SA actions regarding book lists and initiatives done by them, because it seems like this comes up every couple of years.
Isn't there a resolution from the Faculty Senate last spring?
Something like that.
I'm trying to look that up here, too.
I don't remember.
Do you know who in the campus bookstore?
I don't, but I would look for the head of the campus store, because this is their bread and butter. They are fundamentally a textbook organization. Yeah. The Under Armour and coats and socks and mittens is the sideline.
It seems to me that what we should do is put this off until next year, because I think it's a complex issue. But it seems to me that the general philosophy ought to be that when faculty are going to assign books, I don't think it should be kept secret. I don't see any reason a student shouldn't be let in on the secret of what book they're going to be using next year, once it's decided.
I was just thinking of something.
Response to Dean Walkett's question. God.
There you go.
2007. Oof.
Looks like you're going to talk to somebody by the name of Swisher.
Well, he obviously was there at the discussion, though. He doesn't remember word one. Is there anything more for the good of the order? I realize it's early, but I see no harm in adjourning early, although it is always pleasant to sit around and gossip. Hearing nothing further, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
And we vote with our feet.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.